passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Hey, we're back. It is Tuesday, day after Labor Day. What a night of football last night was. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. We'll look ahead to this weekend, number of places, including Tuscaloosa. But let's start in Knoxville right now. And what an afternoon it was in Nashville. Those running backs at Tennessee are going to eat like the best group in the country. And one of the reasons is Dylan Sampson. Man, what a day he had against Virginia. Four touchdowns. He had four touchdowns overall. He had 13 rushes for 52 yards, three rushing touchdowns. Dylan, not a bad start to the season. Congratulations and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let's go back to Saturday. First game's always weird. There's apprehension. There's anxiety. Take us through the day and how you ended up being a major conversation piece in the aftermath.
It's like first game. First drive went really good, actually. Marched down the field. Jay Wright had a lot of good runs. Offense was just clicking. Coach put me in, and we ran the swing pass, scored on the first play. So, I mean, that meant a lot to me to get the first touchdown of the season. And, you know, just the game has a lot of anxiety, a lot of energy. We made those first game mistakes, you know. But we kept our composure, kept it calm, man. And I just say, like, we all played together. Like, us in the running back room, the offensive line, QBs, wide receivers, man, they trusted me when it was time to go get, you know, touchdowns, play for the team. Man, they put me in opportunities to do that. I couldn't do that without my team.
Yeah, by the way, Dylan, let me apologize. I said you had three rushing touchdowns. I forgot about the receiving touchdown. That's only four. I know it's a team sport, but it does have to feel good, though, to have four in your back pocket, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. I feel that's how anybody wants to start off the season, just being productive, doing what I can to help my team. What I said previously before, man, I'm in this team to, like, see it to the end, and I'm here to give my all and help this team in any way possible, and that's just the best way anybody can start off the season, man. I just want to continue it.
Let's talk about the vibe on that team. We were in Nashville and talking to different people and players and coaches. It just felt like this Tennessee team. Last year, nobody really knew what to expect. This year, there are lofty expectations. I realize it's one game at a time. You don't want coach hearing anybody say anything else. But describe what the preseason was like and how this team has come together, especially with a big win.
Like, you know, like the culture is just changing now. Like you said before, it's different now. Like, we expect to be the best. We expect to win, which is the difference in, like, past years, you know. We're establishing ourselves now. Like Coach Heupel always says, teams that expect, those are the teams that win, you know. And just this offseason, we took it personally, developing our character on and off the field, all of us maturing, finding the ways to just better ourselves in the best way possible to go out and handle business like we did in our first game. So I feel like everybody, like almost everybody, took it so intentionally to just reflect themselves and, you know, give their all so they could become their best version of themselves for this 23 season.
Dylan, I was with one of your former teammates Friday night, and he was telling me about Coach Hype. And you know, it's a cliche. You've heard it all your life that certain people are players' coaches. But what makes Coach Heupel such a player's coach?
I would feel like just his ability to just connect with you. He's engaged, and we all know he's an offensive coach, but he's engaged on both sides of the ball. He knows what's going on, special much. Like, he was like the only head coach that made it his business to call me, like to call me multiple times throughout the week. I didn't hear from other head coaches as much as that, and he just shows you, and he lives it out. Like the family atmosphere that he brings, he's genuine, you know. He's a hard coach. Like, he will get on you. He expects success, but man, I'm talking about knows everybody's name in the building, you know, energetic towards everybody, the same person every single day, which is what he challenges us to be. But it's just a blessing to play under a coach like that, and as well the rest of his coaching staff that he has with him.
Tell us about being in the backfield with Joe Milton. What's that been like?
It's fun, you know. Like, he's a different type of player than Hendon. Both of them, I'm going to say having both of them last year was so beneficial to me. But Joe, you know, he, like, you can see the changes in him. You know, what I tell people all the time, Joe, he's calm, cool, and collected, man. He has so much confidence in us, trust in us, and in himself, you know, to make the right plays. And it's just like when you're playing with Joe in the backfield, it's like, man, you're playing backdoor football. Like, he makes it fun. He doesn't make it seem like a job. It's like we're going to go out there and we're going to have fun while we go dominate at the same time. And he's just a great leader taking that role on his team, and he'll do whatever it takes to win.
Chatting with Dylan Sampson of the University of Tennessee. Dylan, let's go back to your upbringing. Some are going to chuckle when I say this. You obviously know where I'm going. You grew up in Baton Rouge. That's, you know, not exactly a direct path between Baton Rouge and Knoxville, but you played at Dutchtown, shattered most of, if not all of, Eddie Lacy's records, who was a great running back at Alabama. So many other players coming out of there, Eric Reed, Landon Collins. I mean, the list that goes on. Talk about your high school, first of all, and what that experience was like, and then how ultimately you ended up at UT.
Okay, so yeah, like, you know, like you listed all those names, man. It's just, it's obviously, you know, culture and history behind my high school and the players that made Eric Reed, Eddie Lacy, you know, his Justin Reed. There's so much history behind it. And my brothers also went to the same high school. They're the one who really, like, you know, put me on this football path, watching them play on Friday nights. But just going to that school and knowing that a great running back like Eddie Lacy played and other NFL stars played, like, it's a history and it's something that I wanted to chase. But I would say growing up in Baton Rouge, it's like I never really had a favorite team. Of course, I always watch LSU. That's the home team, you know. But I felt like it would have been beneficial for me as a man, as a young man, to go where I think I needed to go. That would help me develop as a man and a player on the field. Like, there was a time that I didn't know where I actually wanted to go, and it was a time that I actually told myself that I would never be at Tennessee before this staff got here. But it's just a blessing how things work out, and I'm thankful for it. But I felt like it was beneficial for me to leave that city that I grew up in my whole life, get away from it, you know, venture off on my own, and, you know, become the man that I know I could be.
Well, I think you chose well, and I know you're off and running for this season. It's a long way to go before the end, but enjoy it. Thank you for coming on. I hope we can do this again. You be well.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. So, Dylan Sampson joining us to begin our Tuesday program. What an enjoyable conversation that was. Well, we have a lot to do today. How about Nick Kelly? He spent the day Saturday with Eli Gold, who returned to the booth. Gene Sapikoff, he's a columnist in South Carolina. Did any football team win in that state over the weekend? Matt Stinchcomb as well. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Top 25 is out, and it's all about Coach Prime. They made it. Bama moving up one spot after that big-time win over Middle Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
Florida State got 3 first-place votes. Ohio State, not a lot of love there, all the way down to 5. Tennessee in the top 10. I told you, Tennessee fans, calm down. Texas 11. LSU down to 15, or 14, should be 15. Ole Miss at 20. Duke at 21. The Buffs at 22. A&M at 23. Clemson. When was the last time Clemson checked in at 25th? Well, it's all about the debacle in Durham. Yet another sign Clemson's reign might be over. That according to The Athletic. And Nick Kelly in the Tuscaloosa News doing just an absolutely memorable piece here about Eli Gold's return to the booth Saturday after a bout with cancer. All eyes on Tuscaloosa, number 3 Alabama, number 11 Texas, a rematch of last year, went down to the wire. Southern Cal AD has stepped down, and now the Utah AD has replaced Jennifer Cohen. In other words, if you're the Utah AD, you have more free time than the Southern Cal they do, I guess. Let's get to the phones here and begin with Andre in the ATL. Hello, Andre.
Coach, I've been walking around Coach Feinbaum like a deer in the headlights all day. You know, I got to be a man here. And Florida State took us behind the woodshed. And it wasn't pretty. I hope that they can regain their composure and get things back on track. But, man, that was a beating. When we took a whooping, Coach, ain't no ifs, ands, and buts about it. You know, if we can dish it out, we got to be able to take it, too. But as always, Coach Feinbaum, all the truck drivers out here enjoy your show, and I'm glad and fortunate to be able to call in. You have a great day, Coach Feinbaum.
Thank you very much, Andre. You tell all my trucker friends around the country hello. I love those guys and women, and thanks so much for the call.
Bubba, oh, my God. Are you talking to him? What's going on, Paul?
Randy.
Randy, have some noise for Bubba. Hey, I bet you Cat Daddy's Clemson buddy ain't been in the ABC store running that mouth today, has he?
No, sir.
Hey, I say this to my friend,
Cat Daddy. You think Clemson Tom showed up to the store today? You ever heard him
talk
about
it? Yeah, I doubt it.
I don't think Clemson Tom's doing any yapping.
Hey, Cat Daddy's coach is still complaining about the chain gang eating hot dogs, cost them a football game, and Dabo just forgot to show up. Hey, I'm wondering who had the most embarrassing loss over the weekend, Dabo, Brian Kelly, or Butch Jones?
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, you cannot count anything that Butch Jones does as a serious football conversation.
Hey, the fact that I threw Butch Jones' name in there ought to tell you where I'm coming from.
Did you leave out Shane Beamer?
Hey, he cut me.
Was there some failure to communicate there? Anyway, apparently there was. Let us check. I don't know what he was doing. Yeah, he was sitting with Shane arguing about the Shane crew chomping down on a foot long. Let's Will is in North Carolina. Hello, Will.
Hey, Paul. I want to talk about last night's game. Mike Elko's got it going on in Durham, but the thing I don't understand, Paul, is like during the broadcast or whatever, and about every preseason, Dabo goes on and on about all these players that are the best he's ever had. Like every year, he's got a defensive lineman or a running back, or the list goes on and on how they're the best players he's ever had. But I mean, clearly, the past 2 years, something's not clicking. So, I mean, last night was an awesome game. I have to hear all this stuff where I'm at about Drake May and UNC, but I knew that, you know, Riley Leonard is just as good as a quarterback as Drake May. And Mike Elko has got a good program going in Durham, but I just can't understand how Dabo has all these world's greatest players, but they still – I mean, they fall short. What do you think, Paul?
Well, there's a lot of reasons, I think, and it starts with Dabo's stubbornness, Will. He said so many hypocritical things over the years about, you know, he would walk away if players ever made any money, all these things that have, I think, disconnected him with a lot of young people. I mean, that's not to suggest he isn't getting good players. Clemson is getting very good players, elite players at many, many positions, but I think he's losing some. And you know, his reluctance to engage fully on NIL and his stubbornness about the transfer portal, I think, is costing him. You look at Mike Norvell, what he has been able to do in the portal, other coaches as well, especially Dion, and I think that's one particular reason why Clemson is having so much trouble right now. They've lost three out of the last four games. The only game they've won in the last four games, you know what it is? The ACC championship. I mean, does that make any sense? And I think they've lost 4 out of 7, and 3 of those have been by 3 touchdowns or more. I mean, this is, we haven't seen anything like this since the early days of Dabo Swinney. Let's continue. Pat is in Georgia. You're on the air. Hello, Pat.
Hey, Paul. Thanks. Listen, I'm going to plagiarize one of my favorites on WRFC in Athens. ACC now stands for the All Coast Conference. So, We're Dukie fans right now, and we're Florida State fans, especially our two grandsons. But I want to talk about Georgia, and I'm not on the hashtag fire Mike Bobo list by any means whatsoever. I was hoping to see more of the offense than the last 2 years, but that did look like Bobo's offense out there. And as the game wore on, we started playing more and more second and third stringers. Third string quarterbacks, they look pretty good too. And we got Ball State to practice with on Saturday. So, and I'm not too concerned about South Carolina. I heard you take Clemson to task on ESPN this morning. And I don't think anyone won in South Carolina, did they?
No, Pat. And I think you're right. Thank you very much for the call. Let's continue with more phone calls. And Tony is in Tuscaloosa. Hello, Tony.
How you doing, Paul?
We are doing well.
Hey, I just want to call and make a complaint about College Game Day.
Okay.
I am a big fan of College Game Day, but Pat McAfee ruined the show for me. Bring David Pollack back.
Well, let me ask you this, because I don't see the show because I'm doing another show. What don't you like? Because a lot of people really like McAfee. What don't you like about him?
It seems to me like he's trying too hard. He's 30-something years old, and he's over there just trying too hard.
Well, that certainly describes it in fully and completely. Matt is up next.
Hey, brother. How you doing, man? I want to talk about my Aggies and what I saw from Connor Whitman. He fits the part, Paul, as a quarterback, and I like what the offense is doing. Because Bob Vitrino, Jimbo let him call the plays. But I don't like the fact stupid penalties with the offensive line or defensive line cause us first downs, or when we stop the run, they do a stupid penalty that gives our team a first down. And I wanted to say one more thing I want to talk about here real quick. Actually, before that, I'll give you some good news. I'm moving back to San Antonio, Paul. I'm going to get a job. My mom's getting a job. I'm going to figure it out. I'm trying to move back to San Antonio. I'm trying to part of like $900. I want to tell you the good news, brother. But I want your thoughts on the penalties A&M was doing, those costing them to get their defense off the field and the offense getting first downs. What's your thoughts on that, Paul?
Yeah, Matt, I don't know. I mean, I'm really more interested in this week with Miami. I did not get a chance to see much of the Aggies the other night. But thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check out Doug in Tulsa. Hello, Doug.
Hey, two things, Paul. First of all, there was a lot of talk yesterday about TV providers. If you go through an America TV provider, you're going to get hosed. You are. I pay $16 a month. I go through a London-based company. I get every channel in the world, 16,458 channels to be exact, $16 a month. All right, now my second point is, it is the bizarro world of college football right now. Colorado is ranked. Clemson lost to Duke, not in basketball, but football. LSU and Florida stink. The Pac-12 is undefeated. Texas is overrated. Now, actually, that's not the bizarro world. That's just a normal thing. They're going to end up 9-3. And OU won 73-0, but they did what they needed to do, and they did it. And so that's all I got to say. Paul, you have a wonderful day.
I'm going to certainly try. Craig is up next in Las Vegas. Hello, Craig.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing today?
We are doing fantastic.
I can tell. I was a little taken back by the product that Billy put out there on Thursday night last week. This is some of the same mistakes we saw last year. I know he does not have a true special teams coordinator. He has a game changer coordinator. And special teams obviously did change the game with multiple times, taking punts inside the five. You had two guys in formation with the same jersey number. You saw a shank punt. You saw a hooked 31-yard field goal. But he doesn't believe he needs a full-time special teams coach. I'm going to tell you, and I wasn't a big fan of him after, but Urban special teams were legit. And he was all over it, and he knew how important it was to win games, and so did other past coaches. The OC thing, I think he needs it. I think he's got too much. If he wants to be a true CEO, he does need an OC. And I think my fear, Paul, let me ask you this. Do you think he's took 2.0 when he's a unbelievable recruiter but doesn't have the right staff around him? He seems to be taking bullets for some of the UL guys that are on the staff, but I think it's going to come down to he's got to make some changes. Or, listen, Duke is way ahead of Florida right now based on what we saw last night and last year. I know it's a rebuild, but you're looking at other programs doing
Craig,
things the right way,
Craig,
and you're seeing a repeat of the
thing. I think talking about a rebuild is an excuse. And I'm not trying to point everything toward Boulder, because that's one game, and they may end up having a losing season, and you know what I'm about to say doesn't justify. But there's no time for rebuilds anymore. You have to change the culture immediately. You can't talk about building an infrastructure. You're not building a skyscraper. You took over a football program that really wasn't a disaster. I mean, everyone wants to beat up on Dan Mullen. But compare Billy Napier's record to Dan Mullen's record, and you know, Dan Mullen struggled in recruiting, but he was a really good football coach. Billy Napier wasted the first year. I mean, all we're hearing right now is a bunch of hype in recruiting, but until signing day, I don't believe any of this stuff. So he better figure something out very quickly, because I don't whether his buyout is $31 million or nothing. If you lose the support of your infrastructure, your fan infrastructure, very quickly, you may never get it back.
But will he maybe die on that sword of not having an OC, because you don't see
he might
the imagination on the offense, and you see slow developing drives, you see formation issues. I think that he needs an OC, but he doesn't seem like he wants to hire one.
Well, Craig, I agree with you. He looks overwhelmed, and he could turn it around in a four-hour span a week from Saturday. And quite frankly, I think he needs to, because if he doesn't get a win against Tennessee and they look sloppy and inept like they did at times against Utah, he will be standing on the precipice. Now, you can interpret that any way you want. I'm not suggesting he's going anywhere. I really don't think he will, because of the price tag, and the person that hired him is also going to be the person responsible for determining his future. And he's already on the record of saying, you know, we have time. But the fan bases move very quickly nowadays, and everyone was all in Thursday night. And today, people are searching for answers. We'll take a short break. We come back. Much more to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Okay, we're back on the road. Marty McGee at 9 a.m. Saturday morning, and then SEC Nation. Where will we be? How about where else could we be? Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Dan is up next in Louisiana. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Paul. Thank you. Paul, LSU laid an egg.
Yes, they did.
I tell you, I'm really worried going forward. If they don't turn around quick, we might lose four or five games. Nobody was really on. Receivers weren't catching the ball. Jaden wasn't hitting them. We couldn't get a running game, you know. Our defensive line and offensive line didn't play well, and that was it. I don't know. There's no bright spots right now.
Well, Dan, be patient. I still believe that unlike some programs, LSU is in very good hands. I think Brian Kelly is a superb coach. He made some mistakes the other night that were critically that he paid for, but he at least owned it. He didn't blame the chain crew. He didn't blame the locker room. He just said, it was my fault. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. Let's talk to AJ next. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, how you doing? Love your show.
Thank you.
From here in South Louisiana, I just want your opinion. I know you support Brian Kelly. I am myself. I just don't understand how we were so ill prepared for this game. I think the only take I have on Brian Kelly is he's reluctant to make change. We need to open up the passing game to open up the running game. And we didn't have no downfield passing. I think we might have had maybe one pass of 20 yards or more. Jaden Daniels is in the same form as he was last year at this time, and Brian Kelly promised that he was getting better at the deep ball. I just thought that he should have made a few changes. One, he should have gave Nussmeier a couple of series at least. The defensive secondary is horrendous. I could have got wide open with that defense. I don't understand what kind of secondary Matt House is running, but I just want your thoughts. I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think there's a lot to critique, and all the criticism I think is justified, but you are going to see a lot of mistakes in the first game because you think you know what the other side is going to do, but you really don't. I think the one thing that LSU could not have been prepared for was just how physical Florida State was. I don't know why they couldn't have been prepared for that since they actually saw this team last year. But that was something that LSU was completely clueless about. Paul is up next in Oregon. Hey, Paul, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm a Gator, so I was listening to that other fella who was just so down on the coaching staff, and maybe that's where the blame belongs. But I do think it's also time together and reps, especially for that offensive line. And I think they do better with offensive line blocking. I think that if they were doing the run game better or more often, that would help with the coordination with the offensive line. But that aside, as a Gator fan, I just feel a little better today than, say, if I were a Clemson fan or an LSU fan. We lost to a very good team, and I think we were a few plays to make it even more close, but I was afraid that Utah was going to be able to run it up on us, and they didn't, really. So I'm feeling okay about that. One thing about Florida State, everybody says, oh, well, now they're playing like a SEC team. Well, as a Gator, I recognize they're playing like FSU can and used to play in their heyday. So if I were an FSU fan, which I'm not, I would be sort of like, no, we're playing like FSU. So congrats to them on a big win. And I'm not quite surprised. And I didn't care who won that game because we play them both and they'll both probably hammer us.
Hey, thank you, Paul. Good attitude. Unusual to hear that kind of talk. Rick is in Houston. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Paul. Good afternoon, sir. So, Paul, I think there's a lot of LSU fans that are just overreacting like the team is trash and the season's over. It's not over. I'd much rather have played a Florida State and get the problems exposed where they can be fixed than to have played a cupcake like some of these other schools have. They don't know what their problems are yet, and they can certainly, you know, when they play somebody, they'll come up. But I have faith in Coach Kelly. I mean, there were a lot of mistakes that were made. I mean, it started off right at the start of the game. You're down at the 1-2 yard line, and you run the ball 6 straight times trying to get it in instead of spreading them out, running to the edge or anything. Florida State made adjustments at halftime, and LSU didn't. And to me, that's that's the whole crux of the game right there.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there, Rick. I thought the play selection, I thought the game was lost really early on. When you come down there with it two straight times, get nothing out of it, it just frustrates you. It just, it's like you're losing oxygen. And I thought they made some really boneheaded decisions. And after a while, it started to catch up to them, and then they simply just got run over in the second half. Thanks for the call. We're up against a break. We're off and running. Busy start to the show. We had Dylan Sampson on. We have a number of other guests. We'll talk about Eli Gold in the next hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
So tonight after us, a recap of everything that happened over the weekend, a look ahead on SEC Now. Let's continue with more phone calls, and Scott is up next in Texas. So hello, Scott.
Hey, Paul. Hey, thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
Hey, the Dylan Sampson interview was great. Thank you so much for having him on. He's such a great flag bearer for the Tennessee program. He actually, one of the questions that you asked him brought up my concerns of what I was going to call in for today, too, actually, is that, you know, we got finished with the game on Saturday. And I thought that Joe Milton did fantastic. There was just a couple of little problems, but nothing that I was too terribly concerned about. And then I get on social media, and it just seems like they're, you know, the majority of Tennessee fans were in Joe's corner and just loving on Joe and everything. But there was just a lot of them that just were not impressed, and, you know, saying negative things about Joe and Joe's game and things like that. And, but, you know, I just
Scott,
feel like everyone's
could,
just comparing Joe.
Allow me to
Joe
interrupt for one second. And I urge people. I saw there was some headline a minute ago that Kirk Herbstreit called Ohio State fans psychotic because they criticized. That's what fans do. And I maybe because I'm in this cauldron for a living, I don't take it seriously that some Yahoo took a shot at Joe Milton. I realize he's young, but you know, please don't let a handful of people dissuade you. I think such an overwhelming majority of Tennessee fans love this guy, respect him, appreciative. And yeah, there's some idiot living in his grandmother's basement who gets on a on a computer screen and tweets something obnoxious. Don't let it bother you.
Yeah, I Jason Swain was talking this morning on the radio show about, you know, how last year, how Hendon, you know, didn't get a great start. And thinking about it, you know, even up until the Florida game, and I was actually at the Florida game, you know, Hendon had a couple of bad, you know, bad games, you know, that where he wasn't really 100% on. And I saw the same synergy in the team when Joe was there as I saw when Hendon was there. So I don't think that there's anything to worry about. I think that Joe is a great quarterback, and I think we're going to have a great season.
Jack is in Oklahoma. Hello, Jack. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing? I got a question for you. Is college football a game of momentum?
Most certainly it is.
Okay, so let's say we have 3.5 minutes left in the second quarter. We're driving down the field. We score a touchdown. Guess what? We get to go to a commercial break. We kick a field goal, an extra point. We go to a commercial break. We kick off. Now there's 2 minutes and 30 seconds left. We go to a commercial break after they receive it. Oh, guess what? After their first play, we hit the 2-minute warning. We go to a commercial break. Oh, guess what? They're driving down the field. They finally score again. We go to a commercial break. Same thing with the extra point. Do you not see how this disrupts everything that college football has stood for?
Jack, I understand your complaint, and I don't like watching it any more than you do.
Okay, do you think the players like the change in momentum?
No, they do not.
Do you think the fans that are sitting out there sweating in 100-degree weather, wondering why we're waiting on TV commercials on ESPN Plus to be played?
No. I don't. No, I mean, I don't like
so,
15
so when are,
seconds
when
I go
we
to
a hold when
I go to ESPN to watch
accountable,
something.
Paul, for destroying the game and everything about it that makes college football so exciting. When are you going to ask Greg Sankey why did they do this and what are they going to do to change it back?
By the way, it's not Greg Sankey's prerogative to decide when to go to a commercial. It's the people that run the television networks.
Well, who signs off on the contract for the television network? The big one. It's all of them that we just signed.
Well, these are signed by the president of the ESPN, the head of Disney, and the SEC.
Okay, since we covered the players and the fans, do you think the head coaches of these football programs like it? Chip Kelly, Mack Brown, Ben Roach, in it.
Jack, they may not like it, but what they do like are the millions of dollars they make as a result.
Well, you know, they're all liars, because this is why, Paul, because they say they all care about player safety, but the reality is we're only getting 8 to 10 less plays. But guess what? All these high-end football teams, they get to go to the playoffs now, and they get to play more games and more snaps. They talk out both sides of their mouth, Paul. And honestly, this is the only show and the only platform where you can hold these people to account, because nobody likes these rule changes.
Well, Jack, I want you to tell me what I'm supposed to do. Would you like me to drag the president of ESPN and the chairman of Disney in here and interrogate them?
I mean, that would be fantastic.
Well, by the way, I would be more than happy to talk to them if they were made available.
Because this affects every consumer. It's not
I'm
just
with
the
you.
Poor suckers.
Jack, I want you to understand something. I am for the fans. I'm not a suit. I'm not an executive at ESPN or Disney or Fox or anything else. I care about you and what fans say, and that's why we have this forum here. And I'm sure if my bosses are watching right now, they're probably telling me to shut up. But I can't do that. That's not who I am.
I appreciate you, Paul, in this platform. I know the fans do, but this is another thing to think about. This will make the top teams more difficult to beat. Less offensive snaps. Less momentum in
games. I hate to break for this important message. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.